Eloheinu melech ha'olam shehakol nehi ha'divro. We're holding with Siyata Dishmaya and Sefer Mishlei Parachof, Pasuk Yud. Writes the Chocham Mikol Adam, Evan v'Evan, Eifa v'Eifa. As somebody who has weights in their house, Evan v'Evan, meaning what? They're not the same. As the Rishonim, the commentators point out, if somebody has rights, the Mitzvah David, Osa Shnei Avnei Mishkol, Gedolo Ketano, you have an Evan, you have a measure, a weight, that is large, another one that is small. As the Vilna Gaon and others point out, use the large one for buying, use the small one for selling. Eifa v'eifa, different size measures when it comes to purchasing, selling as well. To'avas Hashem gam shneim, they are both an abomination in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To go ahead and have weights that are not exact, that are not precise. Now the truth is, we have this in the Torah as well. The elaboration, even though it does appear earlier in Sefer Vayikra, the elaboration is in Parshas Kiseitzeh, writes the Torah Kedosha Parachofei, and Pasuk Yud Gimel, Lo Yeh Lecha Bechischa Evan Va'Evan Gedolo Ketana. See, here we have it spelled out for us. You shouldn't have in your pocket two different size weights. One is large and one is small. And regarding measures as well, Lo Yeh Lecha Bebeischa, Eifa Va'Eifa, different size measures, Gedolo Ketana. Rather, what should you have? Now, we can obviously draw the inference that it must be I should have an Eben Shlema, meaning the weights and measures that I have should be precise, should be exact, should be righteous. Eben Shlema v'tzedek yelach. Those are the ones that I should have. Not varying sizes. I should have one that is fully upright, that is just and complete. Eben Shlema v'tzedek yelach. And why should I do this? Well, you just told me that if I don't do this, it's going to be an abomination. The idea the Rishonim point out in Chumash is that not simply do you get the schar that you didn't do in Avera, but listen to this schar that you get. Continues the Torah Laman Yir Yarichu Yamecha L'Adama Asher Hashem L'Kecha Nosei Lach. Akisomas Hashem L'Kecha Osei Lach Olosei Abel. Anyone who perpetrates iniquity, anyone who has these types of varying size measures and weights in his or her home, that's an abomination in the eyes of God. But what schar do you get? Arichas Yomim, which raises the question. Everybody always understands what are the two mitzvahs that we get Arichas Yomim, that we zocha to longevity. But many ignore Parshas Kiseitzeh. Here the Torah tells us, can you imagine grouped with Kibbut Avayim and grouped with Shiluach HaKain, what do we have? Unbelievable. To be honest, in business, and everybody has a business, buying, selling, purchasing. How honest are we? This pasuk sums it up. You're living in life, you're living in this world. This is how you zocha tarichas yomim. And they asked the Vilna Gaon, after all the Vilna Gaon writes that every person, and it's based already on a medrash, and the Ramban discusses this as well in his Hagdama to his Perush al HaTorah, every human being that ever lived or that ever will live is somewhere, somehow alluded to in the pages of the Torah. Famous story of the Ramban in the Talmud who went off the Derech and ultimately to Tshuva, when the Ramban pointed out to him where his name is hinted to in the Torah. Everybody that ever lived, the Ramban even says, even in the 52 Mir Psukim of Parshas Hazinu, we already have everybody that ever lived and ever will live. So everyone is hinted to somewhere in the Torah. So they asked the Vilna Gaon, where are you hinted to? Now you would imagine the Vilna Gaon, the greatest Torah sage, and his generation, not only in his generation, but really the greatest that we have had in the last 300 years, from the 1700s. So here you have a Vilna Gaon. Now, where would you imagine the Vilna Gaon's name is alluded to? Maybe in Aseres Hadibros and Parshas Yisro. Maybe in the Aseres Hadibros and the second set of Parshas Veschonot. And maybe in Beshalach and the Shira Sayyam. You know what the Vilna Gaon's name is alluded to? And the Vilna Gaon said in Perek Chofei Pusik Tezvava Parshas Kiseitzeh, Evan Shlema Vatzedek Yaloch, Evan Shlema is Rosh Tevos, Elio Ben Shlomo. He was Elio Kramer, Elio Ben Shlomo, and his mother's name, the Vilna Gaon pointed out, is hinted to in the same pasuk. asks Rochai Veloshen, this is the Gra, and the Gra is not in my Yaser Sadibris, not in my Lukas Rishonis, not in my Lukas Shinias. Where's the Gra? Because you know what's even more important than the Torah? Are you honest in business? So are you an Ish Yosher V'Neman? And what's the Raya? Shabbos Taf Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. When you get up to Shemayim, what are they going to ask you? Before they even ask you the question number two, Kavot Eitz in the Torah, the very first question when you get up to Beis Din Shemayim is, Nasosa V'Nasota B'Yamuna. Everyone has his own Masav Matan. How many times do we go to stores? Are we honest? How many people are dishonest when it comes to buying and selling in every way, shape, or form? That is Eliyahu ben Shlomo. The Vilna Gaon says that that's where Amarum is to. Not in the words, in the context of Torah, but where? In the context of honesty, of Yashrus, of being upright. And that is the number one question they ask you when you get into Shemayim. Were you honest? Because that is Koveya that establishes our Mabat, our perspective on life. Do we do things with a sense of honesty and integrity? And that's Eliyahu ben Shlomo. And there's an unbelievable story. Now, my friend said years ago in a tshuva drasha that he was in South Africa, speaking in South Africa, and he met up after a shiur, after a lecture, he met up with a certain woman. And this woman said that her father was not a religious Jew. He's not a religious Jew? Anyway, he was buried in South Africa, and a while after his burial, they decided, you know what, she became a balas tshuva, and they wanted to exhume the remains, and they wanted to reinter her father in Eretz Yisrael, to have the schus of being buried in Eretz Yisrael. So they went, after a while, they exhumed the remains. And Eretz Yisrael, you know, you take the mace out of the Aron and you bury the Aron, you bury the mace as is. And there was already a while after the Kavura, and they took out her father from the Aron, and her father was a sholei. Her father was 100% intact. And they asked this woman, who was this big tzaddik, to not have any decay, any decomposition. How could it be? It must be. He was a tremendous tzaddik. And she says, I could tell you, my father, he didn't learn a lot of Torah. He wasn't even really, but he was a tinoch shenishba. At the end of the day, this is how he was raised. But my father was the most honest person I've ever met in business. He had a set of scales, and every single day he started out his day checking the scales to measure each and every day that they were exact, that they were 100% precise. And if he had any suffix, he always gave the customer the benefit of the doubt. His whole life, I've never seen someone more honest in business than my father. And in the end of the day, he was a sholeim. That's nasasav and nasata b'emuna. He was a sholeim legamri. And part of the idea was he wasn't envious of anybody else. That's also what she pointed out. And the pasuk says that what causes the decay? We saw that earlier in Mishlei, when a person's jealousy, it gets into the bones. You feel it in your bones. This person, he didn't have an ounce of jealousy, of envy in him. And the Maisi, he was a sholing. That's the Vilna Gaon, Eliyahu ben Shlomo. And that's why, when they asked the Dibbuk, there was a famous story of a Dibbuk in the city of Vilna. And this Dibbuk, this spirit, wasn't allowed even into Gehenna. So the spirit that is so bad that can't even go into the purgatory fires of Gehenna to purge all sin and iniquity. So those souls are flying all around and they're being chased by Malachi Chaval. It's a very scary type of punishment. And sometimes they find comfort by inhabiting different bodies. And this Dibbuk went into someone's body and it causes a lot of problems. And they told the Dibbuk that if you don't want to leave, we're going to bring you to the Vilna Gaon and he's going to get rid of you. Says, no, anything, but don't bring me to the Gra. Don't bring me to the Gra because I'm afraid of the Vilna Gaon. I'm afraid of what he's going to do. Please, I'll leave. Don't bring me to the Gra. So people said, why are you so afraid of the Gra? He doesn't fast every single day. He didn't eat all that much. He only had a piece of bread soaked in water with an olive in the morning, a piece of bread soaked in olive, soaked in water with an olive in the evening. But he didn't fast. They said his eating is holier than everybody else's fasting. Because he ate 100% of the Shemayim, that's why the Vilna Gaon used to eat with his fingers, because that's how the Kohanim ate from the Karbanos. That's all he was. They asked the Dibbuk, they said, the Gra so holy, he said yes, and they got out of the Dibbuk. Tell us, who are the 36 tzaddikim upholding the world? We know the Gemara relates in Masech HaSukkah, from the Mehim and Beis. Every door in every generation, there are Lamed Vav tzaddikim that are holding up the world. And if we would lose 36, we wouldn't have the world. So God makes sure that there are always 36 tzaddikim. So you'll ask, well, who are these tzaddikim? Well, once we know them, they're not hidden tzaddikim anymore. So we don't know them. So they asked the Dibbuk, tell us, who are these 36 tzaddikim? So the Dibbuk proceeded to name 36 individuals, and as could be expected, nobody knew the names of any of these individuals. They were hidden tzaddikim. Sometimes they could be doctors, lawyers. Well, I don't know, maybe lawyers, it's a little tough. But accountants, maybe tailors, etc. At the end of the day, we know Laban and Tzadikim, they can be shoe repairmen, they can be anything. Sandalar, I had many holy, holy Tzadikim, but the only name that they recognized was the name of the Vilna Gaon. The Dibbuk named the 36 Tzadikim upholding the world, and the Vilna Gaon was what number? Was number 3. The Dibbuk listed them in order of Chashivas and order of Tzidkas. And he said the Vilna Gaon was number 3. So they asked, the Vilna Gaon is number 3. Should be number 1. Everybody knew the Vilna Gaon. The Dibbuk said, you're right. And Tzidkus and Chochmah, the Vilna Gaon is hands down number 1. The problem is, because he was Zocha to Pearson, because the world knew about the Vilna Gaon, that fame dropped him from number 1 to number 3. And the other 35 nobody knew about, but everybody in the world knew about it. He didn't publicize himself, but everybody knew the Vilna Gaon. And that publicity dropped him from number 1 to number 3. But those are the 36 tzaddikim upholding the world. That Vilna Gaon, what was he most proud of? More than the Torah, more than anything, Evan Shlomo, Vetzedek Yalach. That's Eliyahu ben Shlomo. What do we see from this? Writes the Sfarno on the Pasuk. We already talked in the preceding verses about the Ashos HaShchina in Klal Yisrael. So Hashem says, not only do I want to make sure that society can exist, I want to make sure that people follow the rules and regulations, but even if you don't use the dishonest measures, that's the Chiddush, writes the Sfarno on the Pasuk. You're not going to use it. We're not talking about someone who uses the larger one for buying and the small one for selling. Just having them in your house, going to an artifact store and say, oh, look at these nice scales, and they're not exact. Just having them in the store. Some of us say, because it can tempt you to actually use them. Others say, even if it doesn't tempt you at all. Tzorch laharkach osim akelim pentigol nafsho sonu. At the end of the day, what? Just looking at it reminds you of dishonesty. Just seeing in your home things that are not honest, that itself brings that. The same Moshe Feinstein says, not that anyone should throw rocks at someone who's driving a car on Shabbos, but you should scream out inside, Shabbos, Shabbos. Why should you say it inside? Because if Hashem put you in a situation that you had to observe Chil Shabbos, that has an impact. So you have to thwart that negative hashva, that onslaught of negative influence that comes in by you witnessing Chil Shabbos. You have to say Shabbos, Shabbos, Shabbos. Don't let it come in. Just walking into your house and seeing dishonest scales and measures, even if you're not in business and you don't use it, but it has an influence on you. You got to make sure that it's not there, even if something is not Avodah Zorah, just having it in the house. We know people say, oh, a Christian cross, even if it's not Avodah Zorah, you don't bring these things into your house. And as Ashpo, in fact, someone told me a true story that they had a relative who was in a hospital, and he was actually a rabbi, and he was friendly. He was out of town, and he was friendly with the doctors in the hospital, and he brought his wife in to give birth, and it was a Catholic hospital. So there's his wife about to go and give birth, and there's a Yoshka hanging on a cross right opposite that they had in every single room. So she's about to give birth. She says to her husband, please take it down. I can't give birth looking at that man hanging on that cross over there. You got to take it down. So he figures, okay, no one's going to notice until they leave the hospital. Then he'll put it back up. So what does he do? He takes it down right when he finishes taking it down and puts it inside a drawer. A Catholic doctor walks in, and he recognized him, and he said, Rabbi, what are you doing? He said, my wife said, one Jew in the room suffering already is enough. We don't need more than that. We don't need more. So the doctor got a good smile out of that. And the doctor said, no problem. Just make sure to put it up afterwards. And the other day, these things are mashpia. We don't want to look at them. We don't want to see them. Ramaji Yosef has a tshuva. Might not be in a avodah zarah mamish, but we shouldn't be looking or thinking of crosses. You shouldn't be looking, right, as far as the scales. Even if you never use them, it's a toiva to have it in the house. And kamash v'lon, the Torah is teaching us that not only is it a toiva to have them in your house, but by not having them, it's not just, oh, I removed an abomination from my midst. I get a schar marichas yomim. That's living, because that highlights to one and all that I want to live life, that I want to be honest. I don't want to be envious. I don't want to be jealous of anyone. I want to be in this world. I want to be honest. Now, sasa nasata be'amuna, and that's going to give you a richas yomim vishon. Yes.
Oh,
okay. I was going to be a lawyer myself. but there are so many jokes around lawyers then. Baruch Hashem.
Okay, so the conversation was, I want a TV. I'm making up, I don't remember what the thing was. I really can't afford it, but I need it for this weekend to see something. And so I'm going to buy it on Friday, and I'm going to return it on Monday.
Right. Unfortunately, this happens way
and
too often.
I said, but that's renting. And you're not paying rent up. And the person's answer was, but that's how businesses incorporate these things into their equations.
Okay, so I want to point out to number one, not only is that dishonest, but there's also a violation. Not only do we have shailos of Geneva's mammon, because when they agree to go ahead and have a return policy up to 30 days or whatever it is, what are they saying? We know you're really interested in buying it, and your das is maybe to buy it. We want happy customers, so we understand if you want to go and return it. But we're not renting it to you. We're not a rental service. So that's a shailos of Geneva's mammon, because you're using it. At the end of the day, you're putting on wear and tear. It's not the same value. Every single usage, we know once you take a car out of the lot, its value already went down thousands of dollars. It's no longer the same. You have a shailos of Geneva's mammon. But even if one wants to get out of the Geneva's mammon by arguing that there's what's called an umdana, which means stores know that people do this, and they work it into account, they work it into the prices, etc., it's still, Moshe Feinstein writes, an isra of Geneva's das. And Geneva's das, many posts can hold, is an isra deraisa. So Geneva's das is, I'm going to a store, for example, I'll give you another case of Geneva's das. Let's say you're going into a store, you don't plan on buying anything. You're going to go into Barnes & Noble. You're going to buy all your books on Amazon because you got Amazon Prime. You're going to get the free two-day shipping. But at the end of the day, what? Now, if you're walking into Barnes & Noble because you're on a date, whatever it is, you want to go to Barnes & Noble, that's the same thing. You want to get a coffee, that's one thing. But if you're walking into Barnes & Noble because I want to go in with a pen and paper and I'm going to write down all the new books that came out and I'm going to take note of it all and I'm going to look at all them and I'm going to spend an hour deciding all the books that I want to buy with no intent whatsoever of buying anything from Barnes & Noble, and then when I get home, I'm going to order everything from Amazon, that's going to be Das. Our person's walking in and saying, I'm going to go buy from this thing, but I want to go ahead and see what the prices are. If you tell the people that you're just looking, that's one thing. But if you give an impression like you're buying, when you go into a store and you buy that TV, you are basically clearly implying that I'm taking this TV because I want to buy it. If you know from the very outset you have no intention of keeping the TV, you're going to return it after the weekend, that's an issue of Geneva's Das. And Geneva's Das also applies. And Geneva's Das is even by an akel. Geneva's Das is stealing somebody else's Das. And this, because you're basically, if you're not stating it outright, you're basically conveying to them, what's my das? I want to buy this TV. But you have no intent. So you're stealing their das. You're taking their time, their energy. You're taking a salesperson. And think about it. Money is time. You're taking their time to wrap it up, to sell it to you, to put it through the register. All these things are costing them money. And all along, you have zero intent of ever buying it. That's Geneva's das. Even if you give them back the item, where it's a shailos, I pointed out, a Geneva's mammon, because it's not going to be worth the same thing. And this is why there was a whole fiasco last year of a certain clothing company. They stopped selling. Now it's been redone to certain firm communities because there were too many cases of people buying clothing, and they would get clothing in all different sizes, and then they would have people wear it because they had a lot of flexibility with their return policy, and people would buy all the clothing. The kids would wear it, and then they would go and send it back. I met a person who told me one time, he says, Land's End has a very open return policy. He would buy a suit, wear it out, then return to get it. Who says you can't do this? This is Geneva's Das and Geneva's Mammon. They're saying to you, if you don't like something about it, so if you really bought it, and let's say you even wore it five times, and all of a sudden you opened it up and you saw something, you say, I don't like it. If you really don't like it, that's what they want. But to go in and say, I wore it, now I'm going to get a new one, it's Geneva's Das and Geneva's Mammon in many cases. For example, I give you a classic case of Geneva's Das, which Moshe Feinstein talks about. Let's say somebody gives you a sweater as a gift. And you already have the sweater, so you don't need it. So what do? You go over to one of your neighbors and say, hey, look what I got you, just for being a great neighbor. Look at what I got you, this beautiful sweater. And it's somebody that you don't mention anything. You convey a message that you went out to the store and bought them this expensive sweater. Meanwhile, you never would have bought them a gift in a million years. Only because somebody gave you a fancy sweater and you happen to already have it. So that's Geneva's Das. You're stealing the Das. Why? Because they think, and you're telling them, that you went and got them a special present. You didn't get them a special present. So you have to tell them you're allowed to say I got the sweater. I don't need the sweater. I have it. I want to go and give it to you because you're a great neighbor, and that's why I'm giving it to you, which is something called Tovus Hanan. I'm not giving it to anybody else. But you can convey the impression that's Ganeva's Das. Or the post can talk about someone who's selling a used car, and you know that there are a lot of problems with this used car. And you're selling it to this person. They say, oh, I'm giving you a great deal. And you don't tell them all the problems about the car that's Ganeva's Das. Or let's say it has a lot of scratches, and you just take some nail polish and you go ahead and put on a temporary little coating and you didn't fix it. And you know that when the rain comes along and the snow, things are going to wear off and the true colors are going to show. You're not allowed to go and spice it up. The post comes saying, I'll let it take something that's old and make it look like new. It's a big problem. People are selling things on eBay. You can write in new condition, but you're not allowed to write that it's new when it's not something new because you sent it to the dry cleaners and you made it look like new. That's called Ganeva's Das because the person's buying it on Das. They think it's new. The person's not allowed to go and buy the clothing, the TVs, with the intent of returning right afterwards, taking off the tags. And I've heard this from store owners. People will buy fancy gowns. They'll wear them one time to an event. They'll tuck in the tag, and then they'll bring them back. If it's not Ganeva's moment, it is Ganeva's Das, the Kula Day.
People go into stores and they take up a salesperson's time. They have no intention of buying.
Exactly. That's one of the cases. That's a problem. You're allowed to tell the salesperson, I'm here just to look around, and that's fine. As long as you say that. As long as you say that, I'm here just to browse, I'm here just to look, that's fine. But you can't take their time if you have zero intention of ever buying anything, and it's only to go in and look at all the prices and then to go back home and do comparative shopping and get it online. You can see what's out there, but then just tell them, I'm not here to buy, I'm just here to look, to stroll around, etc. Yeah.
If you return and you do not pretend you did not use it, but you return regularly. Like there's a good return policy, so you bring it back and you say,
as long as you don't pretend, that's up to them. As long as you don't pretend, that's up to them. Moshe Feinstein, for example, talks about a case. Let's say you have a butcher.
But you said it's their intention.
It is their intention. Again, as long as you tell the store. But if a person goes back and a person walks into Land's End and says, I bought this to wear. I'm coming back here to return it because you have a great policy because you want good, loyal customers. But I want you to look. I wore it, and I'm not returning it because it's faulty. I'm returning it. It's up to you. Do you want to accept it? Do you not want to accept it? If you're not deceiving them, and you're giving them the ability to say what they want to say, so that's you're not deceiving them. You're allowed to walk in and say, look, I wore this.
Oh, so the TV, the person who bought the TV with no intention to keep it, could keep it and return it and say, I never intended to keep it?
No. That person all along was just going to rent it. This person bought a skirt, and you wore the skirt. And you wore the skirt and you got good use out of it and you did it to buy. Some of these, that's a whole different story what the intent is. Moshe Feinstein talks about, for example, a butcher who has a butcher shop, and you walk into a butcher shop and you see the livers and they're soaked in blood and they look fresh. So Moshe says, let's say the livers are 2-3 days old, they're not fresh. He says, I Ganeva's Das, because they're soaked. And Moshe says, not Ganeva's Das, why? Because you have the right to ask the butcher. It's the general custom to keep the livers soaking to make them look fresh. If you ask the butcher, are they fresh? He's obligated halacha to answer you. In truth, he has to go in and tell you whether they're fresh or not. But he's not mechuyav to put up a sign and say, by the way, everyone, these are 3-day-old livers. He's not mechuyav. Why? Because this is how business is run. So that's the same type of thing. You're allowed to go out and do a garage sale, and you can put out things, and some things look at them. If they want to ask, they can ask. And if they ask, is this new, is this old, is this used, you're obligated to answer truthfully. But you're able to go and put that out. So that's why this is so crucial and so integral. And knowing what's yours is yours, and that's why we said Ramosha Feinstein, when he was asked at MTJ, they wanted to change the learning to Maseches Brochus. And he said, not Maseches Brochus, it's going to be Nezikin, it's going to be Elu Metzius, it's going to be Hamakin. Why? To know that what's yours is yours, what's his is his, and that should be ingrained into their mind. Yeah.
What about recycling and
re-gifting Mishloach Manos? That's how my mother asked, etc. In those cases, it is 100% Beseder. Why? Same way when Chasonim and Kalas, when they get 17 challah knives and they get 14 challah covers, and then they give to another friend of theirs, and believe it or not, One time we actually, I remember years ago, got a gift and the card was still there. They forgot. And we saw that it was really given. So if you're going to do that, be very careful. Take out the cards. And machulai, because the note was still in there. They forgot to take it. They didn't see a note inside the box. So here they're giving the finers a present and it said mazel tov to the gold fiends, whatever it is. So you got to be very careful. But there it's mutter. Why? Because it's the same in Mishloach Manos. Everybody knows this is what's done. Everyone knows. Nobody here eats all the Mishloach Manos that they get. Everybody's recycling. The wine is always recycled. Just don't give back to the same person exactly what they gave you. You have to do it with a chokhmah. But in the end of the day, it's what's called an umdana. For example, I'll give you a case of Rabbi Yosef writes. Rabbi Yosef says, when you have an umdana muchama, meaning when we know how business in this particular area is run, then you're not violating policy. There's a policy when you rent a car. When you rent a car, if you want a second driver, you have to pay extra money in most cases to get a second driver, or have to be over a certain age, and has to do with the insurance, over 21, over 25. But let's say you don't have a second driver. You don't want to pay the extra $10 or $15 a day, so you don't do the second driver. Now, the insurance papers that you sign when you rent the car say, I'm the one who's going to be driving this vehicle, and nobody else besides me is driving the vehicle. What happens? You're driving up from Baltimore to New York, and you came back after Chasna, you rented a car, now it's 2:30 in the morning, and you're getting very tired on the turnpike, and you already had your coffee, and you're falling asleep at the wheel, and your spouse is sitting next to you. So what are you going to do? You're going to Chasham get into an accident. So you say for the last hour of the drive, excuse me, have the spouse go and take over for the last hour of the drive. Hi, how can you do that? It's Geneva's does. You signed a paper that you're the only driver. And the company is saying, if you do have a second driver, no problem, you got to pay for it. So now it's Geneva's Das and maybe even Geneva's Mammon, because he didn't pay the extra $15 today. Rabbi Yosher says, that's not a problem. Why? What is their policy? They want to know that when Reuven is renting it, Reuven is renting it and Leah is not renting it. We don't know, Leah, if you want to have a second driver. Number one, we want more money. And we want to see her driver's license, and we want to see her paperwork, and we want to see if she has anything on her record. And they do not want other people besides this person driving. So Ella, what do they mean? We don't want someone on a regular basis driving. But if you ask the rental company at 2:30 in the morning, I'm tired and I got to be back in my house at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's a choice of, do you want me to drive your rental car tired, or do you want me to give it over to my spouse who's right there next to me, and I'll be in the seat next to her? On Vonda, we know that they would say, they mean bikvias, don't give it away to someone else. But if you're tired or you're sick at the wheel and someone's taking over for you, which means temporarily, they're not renting it for the day. They don't want Reuven to rent, and then he gives it to his wife on Tuesday, and then he gets it on Wednesday. But a Vonda for a half hour, for an hour, driving back and you're tired, that's what's called the umdenod demuchach, which means we're omeid their das. We know that in their mind, if I were to ask them at 2:30 in the morning, they would say, yes, it's okay, you can have a drive. So that's not a problem. So any cases like that, mishloach manas. What's mishloach manas? We all know. Everybody's doing this because no one needs 400 bottles of wine and 70 bags of potato chips. So everybody knows that everyone's recycling it. In such a case, and that's Maseda. But you got to be careful. I mentioned the story that somebody once got us a bottle of Johnny Walker. And I don't drink, so I don't really know alcohol. And I didn't know about all the different levels, the gradations of Johnny Walker. And so we're packing up Mishloach Manos, and our son was in Darchi at the time, so we're getting Rabbi Bender Mishloach Manos. And we give him a nice a bottle of wine, a chocolate bar, whatever it is. And we're packing up Mishloach Manos. And I say, you know, Rabbi Bender, I said, Johnny Walker, I don't know if we're going to ever drink this Johnny Walker. And let's give it to Rabbi Bender and Mishloach Manos. And we put it into the Mishloach Manos, and then I said, you know what? I heard that they're all different levels. Let's just do a Google search. I mean, you know, maybe just check how much is this. So this was a Johnny Walker Blue Label. She puts it online. It's between $180 and $220. I say, I like Rabbi Bender, but on perm, I don't like him that much. I don't need to give Rabbi Bender a $200 bottle of wine just for Mishloach Manos, which he's probably then going to recycle unless he knows how much it really is. He might then just recycle and somebody else might get it. In the end of the day, I gave him a nice bottle of wine, a $15, $20 bottle of wine. I don't think he needs a $200 bottle of wine, but it's best to go and do the research. In such a case, that you don't have Geneva's Das. But that's what Shlomo Melech asks Rabbeinu Yonah. So what's the Chiddush then? We just read a pasuk. I read you the Psukim in Kiseitse, which were mamash the same thing. Evan ve'evan, Eifa ve'efa, don't have in your house because they're to'eva. And here we have Shlomo just chazering, just reviewing what we just read explicitly in a pasuk in Chumash. So what's the Chiddush? Right, Rabbeinu Yonah, you're right. I don't need Shlomo to just tell me lo hutzruch b'sefer zeh lucht of hamitzvahs the asoros haksuvahs b'torim lo yechadesh tamam osvido. I need some new something here. What's the chiddush? He says, I'm a gross elu nismu cholenya tzmima salev shehuska lamala. All right, so Ben Yonah Givaldik, what were we talking about? Mesalech Petzumo Tzadik. We want someone who's walking innocently. Purity, Zach V'Yoshar. As Shlomo Melech is saying, we're going like the Sforno. I'm not doing business with these things. I don't have in the house to do business with them. I'm not going to do business. But if you're a truly upright and honest person walking, you're not even going to have them in your house. You're not even going to have them anywhere in sight. You don't want to even be tested, be tempted by them in any way, shape, or form. That's what he wants you to know. And that's why the Matsudas David even points out, in the end of the day, what's the Gam Shnei in both of them? It's only one of them. It's only the Gedola or the Katana, depending on whether you're buying or selling. That's dishonest. Peretz is what? Don't have any there. If you don't have an honest system set up, don't even have any of them in the house. And at the end of the day, don't be tempted in any way, shape, or form. That's Rabbeinu Yonah. See, he wants to focus on the Midos Shebo. The Torah is focusing on the Yisur of someone doing actual business with them. Over here, Rabbeinu Yonah says, even just having them around, like the Sforno, keep them away. The Rabbah gets another idea, similar to Rabbeinu Yonah. Look at the context. What were we talking about? Midos. We were talking about Tchunas and Nefesh, character traits. All right, so the Rabbah, we're not just talking about actual weights and measures. He says, we're talking about your midos tovos as well. And like the Rambam who writes in Shmona Prakim and in the beginning of Hilchos Deis in the Mishnah Torah, Zeki Anivcha Varoi Bemidos Hu Ashovi Vahayosha Mizulos. I don't want the extremes when it comes to midos. I want the golden mean. I want the middle road. The middle road, except for Kas and Gaiva, where you do have to take the extreme, the Rambam says. I always want you to have the middle road. And that, writes the Rabbag, is what we're talking about over here. Don't have an Evan Gedola Vekatana, your own system of weights and measures inside your psyche. Don't have sometimes you act like this, Gedola, sometimes you scale it back in your Akatana. Always act in the right, measured, middle of the road type of form. So it's a remiss to us. He's borrowing the Psukim of the Torah, which spoke about actual business, using these non-upright scales, weights, and measures. And now he's saying that's how you should approach life, writes the Rabbag, and make sure that you take the middle road. Don't go ahead and be wishy-washy. And that's why Shlomo Melech wants to pack home this point that is so important. He already told us at the outset of Perek Aleph, the very first pasuk in Perek Aleph, I was along the same ideas. Mosni Mimro Toamas Hashem, scales that are filled with deceit, that's an abomination. Evan Shlema Ritzono. What do I want? I want perfect and honest weights and scales. And that's what I want. Writes the Malbim. What is the Ratzon Hashem? Ratzon Hashem is that I want to go ahead and do everything in my life that's upright. Not just when I'm doing business. Looking at scales. When you walk into a house and you see scales that are upright, it changes your whole perception of life. I want to do things upright. The famous story of the father, I'm sure there are many stories like this. Father wanted to see if his son was learning well in yeshiva. So he got to yeshiva. Oh, he just missed the break. He got there in the middle of second Seder. He didn't want to pull his son out and ask him how he's doing in the middle of second Seder. What did he do? He asked the mashgiach, well, can I go to his dorm room? He said, yes. He went to his dorm room and everything was neat. His bed was made and all his clothing were neat. All the sforno were perfectly aligned on the shelves. He says, I don't have to speak to my son. I know he's learning well. I know he's learning well. Because when things are neat and orderly, I know he's learning well. There are research articles done how just the simple two-minute act of making your bed in the morning changes your psyche. Why? Because every time you go back into the house, if you see messiness, and then it leads you to be messy. But if things are neat, if things are aligned, it changes perception of things. Changes the outlook when things are where they're supposed to be. We know it's not coincidental. Yes, Kenny Israeli, how are you doing? Mashlam Cha, Mashlamech. Hakol B'Seder. What do you mean Hakol B'Seder? Say, Baruch Hashem, Hakol Tomor. The answer is, even Mashalo B'Seder is a Gamkin B'Seder. That is the answer. The Chometz Chaim said, if life could be different, it would be different. It's exactly the way Hashem wants it to be. That's Mashlamech. Hakol Meseder. What's Meseder? It's exactly aligned. It's exactly the way it's supposed to be. That's what life is all about. That's why we said, Rav David Kaliner, how do you get up in the morning? How do you start your day? A cup of coffee. You got the dark coffee. You put in some milk creamer. You make it light. It's hot. You put in some water or milk and you make it cold. You have the bitter coffee grains. You put in some sugar sweetener. You make it sweet. Hey, Mr. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I get up in the morning. Is today going to be bitter? Is it going to be sweet? Is it going to be cold? Is it going to be warm? Is it going to be dark or light? I don't know. There's one thing I do know. It's exactly Shakol Nehiyad B'dvarav. It's exactly the way Hashem wants it to be. It's exactly the right to measure. Hashem is the master chef, and that is life, Hakol B'Seder. That's why, writes the Rabbah, and you walk into your house like the Sforno, and you see precise weights, measures, everything is neat, everything is orderly, and at the end of the day, that changes the psyche, and that's part of the Gemara and Brochus Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis. Walking into a nice home, a nice apartment, seeing that things are orderly and neat, and that changes your psyche. You're going to go out and you're going to be organized. We accomplish so much more when we are organized. And that's Pasuk Yud. Not only is it a to'eva, but when you match it up with the Pesukim in the Torah, if you do keep to this, then you're Zocha Tarichas Yama. Gam, b'ma'alolov yisnake nar. Again, we're talking about character traits. That's the context. And that's what Rabbi Yonah told us. He's not here to tell us a halacha about an honest system of weights and measures. It's here to tell us that it's a reflection of where you're holding in your midos. How honest and upright and just are you? So now if you want to test the waters, you want to go ahead and recognize, the Gros says, Yisnaker Loshen HaKara. Now you want to look at a young youth, at a young person, and you want to recognize, how do you recognize them? Gabim Ma'alol, if you recognize them by their deeds, and Zach and Yoshapolo, if their actions and their behavior is pure, Zach V'Noki is pure, and Yashar is upright and just, and that's how you recognize their actions. What's the difference between Ma'alolov and Pa'olo? They're two somewhat synonymous words that both imply actions, behavior, and deeds. Writes the Malbim, who so often throughout his unbelievable commentary highlights the difference between what's called Shemesh and Duff and the often synonymous words. So writes the Malbim as follows. The Ma'alolim Hema Pa'ulos Atzluyis B'tchunas Nafshios. The actions that we do that are called ma'alolim, those are the ones that are dependent on our inner character traits. Kemo ha'pulos ha'tzomchus v'tchunas ha'gaiva o'anol, whether a person's arrogant or humble, and you produce an action, that's called your ma'alolim. Achzorius or achmir, whether it's cruelty, callousness, or mercy and compassion, that's called ma'alolim. So what's the idea over here? And Tira Paul Weissman, if you see behavior from a child, and you don't know where is this coming from, and you want to know the mahos, the essence of the nar, and what's going to be in the future, Tuchel HaKer said you can recognize it, it's readily discernible. Ayyadei Tchunos of Amidos, if you take a look at the midos of the child. Gam B'ma'alol of Yisnaka, how do you recognize a youth? You look at the midos that drove the actions. Look at their inner character traits, and that's going to give you a glimpse of what's going to be with this child in the future. Alamosho, Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, killed the Mitzri. How do we know Moshe did it for the right reasons? Did he do it because of Avas HaTzedek VaYosher? Or did he do it because of revenge or gaiva? I can assure you, we don't know. Since the Torah already told us VaYigdal Moshe, VaYitzalach VaYar B'Savlosam, the Torah already revealed to us who is Moshe Rabbeinu VaYigdal. He grew up, he matured. And VaYar B'Savlosam, Nosam Einav V'Libel Yasmei Tzaleim. We saw already the Torah revealed how compassionate and merciful he was. Then we know to judge the ensuing action in the context of the midos that he did it because of Yashrus and Avas HaTzedek. So too, when we want to look at a person, we look at the midos, and that tells us about the behavior. Sagam Molov is Nakanar. Look at the deeds that are driven by the midos. Emzach Yoshapolo. Take a look at the actions. See if the actions are just and the behavior is pure. Those are the problem of the regular actions that he does. But if you want to recognize the child, go into the Ma'alolim, go into the deeds, and see what they're all about. See what's driving those actions. Listen to our verse, and then you'll see this.
You were a little boy, and it was still super salt. You yelled out, "Mom, did you pay for the pickle that I took?"
Oh, boy.
So you were honest even then.
Okay. I'll tell you, you can't. I hope the pickle was good.
I
wrote the money. But
no, you tell me.
How about you have to?
I did. I paid for it.
So I'm going to read you a piece of Rav Hirsch, which is one of the most fundamental pieces in his entire commentary. It connects obviously to his commentary on Chonuch L'Nar Al Pi Darko, but this is based on this pasuk of looking at a child and seeing where it's going to go. He says, the ma'alolav are the actions of the child while in the stage of development, because an alal is a young human being who's still in the process of development. Writes of Hirsch, here is the whole principle of education in a nutshell. This pasuk, our task of educating is chinuch, initiation into a sacred calling. We are to conceive of it as consecration. However, and this is in Yoni Dioma, we're talking about Truma Tetzava, the Binyan HaMishkan. Just as our sanctuary and our sacred objects were not consecrated by mere words, but by being put initially to their predetermined use, so too our children are to be introduced and accustomed to their destined task in life, not mainly by words, but by practical actions. And you have to have the children observe the proper behavior of their parents. And chinuch is, why do we have an Indian of chinuch? Don't just teach them. Don't just have them go to class in school. You already start them in their young years to do the mitzvahs. And that's chinuch. Be mechanich them. What does it mean, educate them? No, be mechanich chinuch is chanukas abayas. Chanukas is consecration. Consecrate them for the lofty task they're set to achieve later in life. Eventually, having reached responsibility and maturity before God, they will have to know by themselves which duties to fulfill and what to avoid. These duties should be practiced already in childhood under our guidance and supervision so that when left to his own judgment in the future, our child will walk by nature only in good ways, pleasing to God, as we have shown him. Shown to whom? Lanar. Taking into account all his talents and aptitudes, his way of thinking, his sensibilities and his feelings, his wishes and his motivations, his talk and his actions, every faculty should go into the service of the good, should be made ready for the good and deflected from evil. There is no tendency which taken by itself is innately either good or evil. Everything depends on the way in which it is used. And that's why, what to me does Shlomo single out? We're talking about training a child, knowing what the child's going to be good and honest throughout his life. Im zach v'im yashar, what to focus on. Zach and yashar, writes of Hirsch, if parents wish to have their children start out in the right direction, these characteristics should command their full attention. Im zach v'im yashar, moral purity and straightforward honesty. And they can be observed when the child is acting in free or controlled behavior. At such times when his inherent inclinations come to expression, parents should ask themselves about each one of their children separately, whether he tends to greediness or if he has a dominant trait of pleasure, etc. These are inclinations that can become obstacles to a child's future moral behavior. That's what to look for. That's what to train. And that is what is so crucial when raising the children. Have to ingrain them in those actions already at a young age. In stories about the Chavetz Chaim, already when he was 6 years old and 7 years old, the stories abound about his level of honesty and tzmimus dik. And that's the idea, to train the children already at young ages that they act in pure form. Yes.
What if I could tell your child, when the Mishloach comes to the door, don't open the door, tell him dad is sleeping or whatever.
All right, that's a problem. Somebody just told me a story last week. A mother told me a story that her son was at home. And her son, she heard the son tell the Mashalach, I'm sorry, nobody's home. Said, go back to the door and tell them somebody is home, but we can't come to the door right now. Said, don't go in and lie. Never lie. Never have the sheker come out of your mouth. The mom said, if we're unavailable, unavailable. And if you can't come, you can't come. For example, Rav Chaim Kanevsky once asked his father, the stipler. The mother of Rav Chaim Kanevsky, the stipler's wife, I gave him a 20 shekel, but whatever it was, and says, please go out and buy, go to the makolet and buy some food. I need some milk, I need some eggs, etc. So he took the money, went with Rav Chaim, with Chaim Kol, and they went to the makolet. On the way, an ani came over to them, and an ani said, can I have stock? And the sniper said, I'm sorry, I don't have money to give you. So then they proceeded on to the makolet, and he takes out the 20 shekel, and he buys the milk and the eggs. So Chaim says to his father, the sniper, he says, I don't understand. He says, you didn't have money. Says, that's why I was very careful. I didn't say I don't have money. That would have been a sheker. And he said, I don't have any money to give you because I only have exact money to buy the milk and the eggs. You can't say to an onion, you're not allowed to say to an onion, someone's 6 out of 10, you can't say, I don't have any money. You're allowed to say, I have money. I don't have any money on me to give you because I need it for things that it's already earmarked for. You can't lie to these people and say, I don't have money. You can't lie and say, nobody's so. You can say that I don't have any money now to give you. And that's where Rabbi Yosef writes as well. You're allowed to say when a Mashulah comes to the door, you're even allowed to say, that you can demand papers. So you're allowed to say, if nobody's home but you're allowed to say, I'm sorry, I don't want to open the door security wise. You have every right to do so. I, the mitzvah sucker, you're allowed to say, I'm afraid. And the story's about, and it's highly recommended, a woman alone should never answer the door from a shuluch. You can quote me on this. Never answer the door. I don't care how long his beard is, how big his hat is. We have too many crazy stories. Someone told me last year in Baltimore, someone dressed up as a mishuluch, and he would knock on doors with chule. Never, ever answer the door unless there's somebody else home.
On Purim, you can't turn anybody away. So what do you do?
Again, even on Purim, if there are people in your house, that's a different story. But if nobody's home but you, even on Purim, you're not mechuyev, because you're not saying, oh, I don't want to live because I don't want to give you tzedakah. The isser, the lav, is lo sa'amets es levavcha. You can't say, I'm going to be cruel and callous, and I'm going to turn you away, I'm not going to give you money. Yes, I want to give you money, but I have to worry about my security. I don't know. If there's someone else at home, I can let you in. Or I'll tell you what, I'm going out to the store at this and this time. You can catch me. I'm away to the store. You can catch me outside by the car. You can catch me in the store at this and this time. You can catch me at Shacharis. You can catch me in Mincha. You can give tzedakah. You're not mechuyev to ever put yourself in danger. Not only that, if they don't have all the paperwork. If they don't have all the paperwork, again, Purim is different. Called the Poshid Yad Nos and Lo. But Yosef says, nowadays when there are a number of charlatans, you're allowed to ask for the Tuda, for the certificate, and if they don't have a Tuda B'Tokef, you're not mechuyev to give them. And I'm going to you, you're allowed to ask, let me see your certification to see that somebody actually vetted you. And only then do you have to give because of the fact that there are charlatans here. But that's how we train the children. That's why it's an important mitzvah, train the children to give tzedakah. And Zach from Yosher to give tzedakah, not to lie. The Chazon Ish was asked, how did he become the Chazon Ish? He said, obviously he worked very hard, but he said he owed tremendous hakar satov to his mother because his mother taught him and his brothers already at a young age never to have a dvar sheker b'yotzi mipicha. Never to lie, and the Chazon Ish said, I never lied my entire life. I never lied my entire life. And therefore, he says, I had purity of thought. He was very makbid on negav aser, and making sure he always had taras yadayim, but his mother taught him never to go out and lie. That was a big key. In fact, Moshe Feinstein once gave a psak about a certain sensitive issue. And certain Hasidim came to his apartment, and they made a macha. They made a protest outside of Moshe Feinstein, the Goldo Hador, the Posek Hador. This group of Hasidim, they made a macha, they made a protest because they were upset at a psak that Moshe gave. And Moshe came out of his apartment and they started saying, Rabbi Feinstein, how can you say such a thing? I came and said such a psak. And he stopped and he was calm as ever because he said, even though people knew Moshe as a soft, gentle, unbelievable, warm individual, he said he worked, some say 7 years, some say 14 years. He said he was a kasan by nature. Said his natural state was to be a kasan, was he had a temper. And Amosha said he worked, some say 7 years, some say 14 years, until he didn't have an angry bone in his body. Then you had the story about someone who accidentally slammed the door on his finger, and he didn't get upset at all, because Amosha said he worked for many years, never ever to get angry. Chazon Ish, somebody once came to Chazon Ish and said, sorry, I did such and such, and it got you angry. Chazon Ish says, Baruch Hashem, I worked on myself, I never got angry once in my life. Ever. And people worked on themselves. Anyway, it's not like the Gedolim, they were that by nature. Chaim Kanevsky, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, was known, the Briscoe Rav said, as the biggest, as the Golda Hador and Chesed. He had an open-door policy. Rav Chaim said, by nature, he said he was a tough person. He was a tough person by nature, he said, and he worked his whole life on destroying, not just overcoming it, on uprooting that nature from his midst. And so one of the ways he did it was he had a total open house policy. Everybody knew the Golda Hador of Chaim Brisker. His door was always open. Any who needed a place to sleep for the night could just park himself on the floor of Chaim Soloveitchik's house. And that's what people, in fact, one person, one Ani came in and made himself a Ben Bias and slept on the floor of Chaim Brisker's house for 6 months. For 6 months! One day, he bumped into Rav Chaim, who was leaving his house. He bumped into Rav Chaim, and he had no idea whose house it even was. He just was told, this was the Chesed house. If you need a place to sleep, just take out a bag, and you can sleep on the floor. One day, he bumped into Rav Chaim. The Golda Hador was the owner of the house. And he says, Rav Chaim, he says, excuse me, sir, but I've been here for 6 months. Do you think they're going to kick me out already? So he had no idea where he was. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik says, look, I've been here for even longer than 6 months, and they haven't kicked me out yet, so you're doing pretty well. And he said that was part of overcoming that midah, that he opened up his house because he was a tough person by nature, and that helped break down the chesed, putting yourself in a situation, just like fear of heights. You have to face it. You have to deal with it. So forcing himself to open up his door, and that's the same way that in Rezhin, there was a shochet, and there was a shochet who had a house, but it wasn't the fanciest house, and the Rezhin Rebbe always would send the guests in town to his house. So after a while, he said to the Rebbe, he says, Rebbe, I don't mind doing the mitzvah. He says, we have all these gevirim, all these people with much bigger homes. Why are you sending them all to me? He says, you know why? He says, because you do shechita every day. Every day you're shechting cows, you're shechting animals. And after a little while, you know what? Some of that cruelty is going to rub off on you. And you become desensitized to other people's, even animals' feelings. He says, to combat that, you're going to do Hachnasas Orchem. I want you to be involved in Hachnasas Orchem all day so that you never let the feelings of cruelty and callousness ever creep in. Always combat it with Hachnasas Orchem. And it's the same type of thing. A person who goes out of his way to go ahead and push himself, that's a big lesson. Somebody just told me this story, Mamish, a few days ago. A great, great story. I heard the story in Arab Shabbos that there was a Rebbe in Brooklyn years ago. And this is about 50 or so years ago. It's a Rebbe in Brooklyn. I don't think he remembered the Rebbe. And on Sukkot, he used to have an open Sukkah. And people all over used to come from Brooklyn and way beyond Brooklyn. Everybody used to come to this Rebbe in the Sukkah. And there were a lot of aniyim. The sukkah was open, and even aniyim, and even people who hadn't showered or shaved in days, would come sit in the sukkah because the Rebbe would put out all this food, and everybody had all they could eat. Meanwhile, one of these aniyim, one of these people, homeless, whatever it was, came. It was a great food, and he sat. He didn't have the chutzpah to sit right next to the Rebbe, but he sat two seats away from the Rebbe. He says, meanwhile, after he was seated there, and he hadn't showered in days, and he smelled, and somebody came in, he said there was a place in Coney Island where the wealthy people would go for a shave, and there was a fancy massage and baths. He says there was a wealthy person, and he just came from this place, and he had a shave. Okay, I don't know. Wherever it was, whatever the case was, this person came in looking pristine, looking sharp and dapper, and he came, and the Rebbe said, oh, Yankel, he says, come, I got a seat right next to you. And Yankel already saw who was sitting at the seat. He would sit right next to this person, and he was all smelly and disgusting. He said, Rebbe, it's okay, I'll stand in back. He says, no, Yankel, I want you to come up. He says, Rebbe, I like the view from here. That's okay. I'll stand in back, etc. He says, Yankel, come here. He says, Yankel, I want you to sit right here. He says, Yankel, you're sitting right in between us. He says, I want to teach you a lesson. He says, I know why you don't want to sit here. He says, and you know what's going to happen after 120 when we go up to Shammai? And we're going to want to sit next to Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, Sar, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. And imagine, he says, you know what they're going to say? Hashem, I worked my whole life. I sit next to this smelly person. Look at their Averis. Look at the way they live their lives. And, well, look what they were exposed to. And I don't want to. I'm going to sit next to them. Oh, then Hashem's going to say, yeah, but they sat next to smelly people too. They also born in people that were less than clean and are into their. Oh, they did? Oh, then I want them right next to me. That's a great smell because they'll smell like chesed. And the Rebbe says, I'm not going to be zoichet to see Avram Yitzchak. He says, but you know what? The schus I have is I'm going to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if I sat next to people like that who were way beneath me, who sort of a chulek, and I sacrificed to sit next to them, then Emet Hashem, that schus will stand for me in Gan Eden, that I won't smell too badly when I'm next to the Vilna Gaon and the Chavetz Chaim, etc. So therefore, don't lose those opportunities. That's what the Rebbe wanted to go in and teach him. And you never know. It's all about the midas. So back to the Moshe story. So they worked on their midas tremendously. So Moshe was attacked, basically, was verbally attacked. He walks out of his apartment, and they say, how can you give such a psak? That sheker b'chosa. And Moshe stopped, and he says, look, he says, since my youth, he says, I never said a word of sheker my whole life. He says, I never read a newspaper. I never read fake news. He says, in the end of the day, I never brought any word of falsehood into my mouth. He says, so you can argue with my psak, but it's not sheker. So don't ever accuse me of saying sheker. How's our Moshe? At the end of the day, if somebody watches his mouth, that's why Moshe's brachas are powerful. We mentioned the Vilna Gaon, the Chavetz Chaim, people who guard the mouth. You know, if it's such a zach v'yosher type of mouth, then you know their actions are going to be great. So Chavetz Chaim, the Chazon has said, from the time he was already a young lad, his mother trained him, whatever you do, but never be motzi a devar sheker from your mouth, and you'll see what that's going to take you. So not only a devar sheker from your mouth, but continue Shlomo. Oz and Shemas v'ayin roa. These are the two main senses. We know that the senses, the Bali Machshava tell us, we have the five senses, the two highest, just like the Rosh is called the Rosh because it's Rishon Le'ivarim. It's number one, our head is the most important part of our body. What's the most important? Sight, which is the highest up. And right alongside sight, we have the sense of sound. Those are the two most valuable senses, the sense of sight and sound. God is ayin roa, oz and Shemas. And we are just the opposite. Why? The Malbim says, because those are us, first we hear things, we hear sounds, and that causes us to look in the direction of the sounds. So practically, we start with Ozan Shemas, then we go to Ayin Roa.
Your nose is right close.
Right underneath. That's why the sense of smell comes right after that. Excellent.
I think that.
But we can live in function. Right, but we can... No, the ears are a little higher. The ears are a little higher than the nose. All right, but where do you smell from? The nose itself. But the smell comes in through the nostrils. The nostrils are located below the eardrums where they pick up smell. So in the end of the day, sight, sound, and smell. Smell is right up there. And smell is a ruchniyistika, is a spiritual type of sense. But a person can live without the sense of smell. A person who is blind, the Gemara says in Adarm 64b, in a certain sense is choshev kemeis, because they're taken out of a certain dimension of the world. And the Gemara says above a comma that if you hit someone and you break their eardrums and you make them deaf, you have to pay to make kulo. It's as if you took them out of this world, because those two senses are the most integral to living a productive life in this world. Smell a person can live without, even though you're missing that sensory, that experience, which certainly is a spiritual one. So the top two, though, are the Ozen Shmas Ayin Roa, Hashem, Osek Am Shneim, to know that Hashem fashioned both of them. What's the lesson? Writes Rashi, Kolomer, Masa Yodav Heim, God says, use them. Know that they're gifts from God. I want you to use your ears to listen to Musar, listen to rebuke, pick up the messages. Meaning what? Already at a young age and throughout life, I want you to be Zach and Yashar. Listen when people rebuke you and see the right things, see into the future. Zosameris, see the consequences of your actions. That's what I want you to look at. Ed's the Vilna Gaon. What's the Ayin Roas and Shamas? And what's Gam Shneim? How Kol Bar Hashem know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you those abilities. Why? Because He wants you to use Machshava, Dibur, and Maisa. And all these psukim together are telling you what? Hashem knows what you're thinking. Hashem judges you accordingly. And He looks at your Machshava, at your Dibur, and your Maisa. Are you looking into the future? Are you really listening to rebuke? Are you going out into my world? Because adds the Malbim, and with this we close, adds the Malbim. What's the lesson of this pasuk? Hashem says, I gave you these gifts because I want you to go out into my world, and I want you to see the Maisa Hashem Itzara Bachini Bebruim. I want you to see the glorious world, meaning what? This itself is going to go ahead and put you in the right mindset. Go out to my world. Listen to the sounds of the birds chirping. Look at my beautiful world. See the Neflos Abori, writes the Ramam Perek Beis of Ilchas Yisodi HaTorah. You want to get to Yiras Aromos? Go out and see God's hills and His mountains and His lakes. See Vietnam. See Bermuda. See Hawaii. See the most beautiful countries. See my world, and you see Neflos Abori, and that'll give you an appreciation of the world that I made. In fact, Reader's Digest started a new column based on classics from Reader's Digest of decades ago. This piece is a Reader's Digest classic that was actually first appeared in the April 1965 issue of Reader's Digest. And it was in this month's Reader's Digest called Overtaken by Joy. And she's talking about, the author is talking about appreciating the brief moments of life when you just connect with God and connect with the world around you, connect with nature, and you appreciate all the beauty. And she talks about somebody going out on a lonely beach at twilight. It was a time of grief, and just connecting to the sea, connecting to the world, connecting when a rainbow arched across the sky. It was as though this beam of color had been built for us alone. We can hardly speak for the awe and the joy. But then she brings a story. Page 97, she brings the following story. She says, I remember finding myself seated beside an old gentleman on a train some years ago. He sat quietly looking out the window. His eyes searched each leaf, each cloud, the lines of passing houses, the upturned faces of children watching the train go by. It is beautiful, isn't it? I ventured at last, intrigued by his absorption in the world of nature. Yes, he said. Then he smiled and waved a hand at a passing hay wagon. See, he said, hay going to the barn. And he made it sound as though there could be no greater event than a wagon load of hay on its way to the mow. He saw the question in my face. You think it's strange, he said, that just a hay wagon means so much to me? But you see, last week the doctor told me that I only have 3 months left to live. Ever since, everything has looked so beautiful, so important to me. You can't imagine how beautiful. I feel as if I had been asleep and had only just woken up. death is a gift because it reminds us we don't live forever. Look at every leaf, every cloud, every single thing in life. And what comes on the heels of using the Ayin Ro and the Ozan Shamas, I'll just leave you in suspense. I'll tell you how. Pandi Rosh, don't love sleep. Writes the Daos Sofim. It doesn't say don't go to sleep. The very next pasuk is don't love sleep. There's so much in this world to absorb, to learn from. So many beautiful things to see. Don't look for the next opportunity to sleep, to relax. Wake up. Go out into my world, God says. You want to learn midos? Erev and Kufan Beis, you can learn midos from the animals. Watch the tznias of a cat. Watch how the animals interact. There's something to learn from everything, from everyone. Don't sleep too much. Don't love sleep. Get up and go and do and accomplish and see. And it might be 27 degrees outside, but put on that jacket and still look at the sky. Look at the clouds. Look at the kids' faces. Look at every single precious moment. And just in mind, even though I know I spoke about it the last three Shabbosos, but somebody now sent me an article that his father wrote. How in one day, you talk about cell phones, he says in one morning, he was out and he was taking a walk and he saw a father and a son taking a walk and the father was on his cell phone and he wasn't watching as the son was observing nature and marveling at all the world of nature. He missed this golden opportunity. And then a mother taking her daughter out for yogurt, and the daughter, the young daughter, is eating the ice cream and the yogurt, and it's getting all over the face, and she looks so adorable. And the mother's head is on the cell phone. She's missing how cute her young daughter looks. And people say, everyone's absorbed in the cell phone. You're missing nature. You're missing beauty. He says he was out for a walk, and he was watching the deer, and he was watching the raindrops fall off the leaves. And this person's looking at a phone. This person's looking at a phone. And then they, what are we really looking at? What's catching our attention? I, you know, as in Shemas, God says, I gave you Shneim. I gave you things. Use them. Don't love sleep. Go out into my world and enjoy it and utilize every single second. Have a freilich and Purim. Emet Hashem. We will not have Shir the morning after Purim. I don't know how I'm going to be feeling and how you're all going to be feeling. So, Emet Hashem, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Emet Hashem, a week from Monday. Shushan Purim, you have all to enjoy putting together all the leftovers from all the Mishloach Manos and repackaging them, Emet Hashem.
Tomorrow night, Rabbi Fire.